This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon is award-winning personal health columnist for the New York Times and best-selling author, Jane Brody. She joins us for our first look at diet and nutrition of 2009. One of the topics we'll take up this afternoon, delicious, nutritious, and economical meals. We'll get some ideas for working a variety of new and healthful dishes into our lives. For Jane Brody, variety is key. In the prologue to her classic Jane Brody's Good Food book, she says, "You don't have to become a fanatic or a health food devotee to eat healthfully. In fact, you can have your cake and eat it too, as long as it's not too much cake too often." Listeners, your questions about diet and nutrition are invited this afternoon. Perhaps you have a recipe you'd like to share? Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Jane Brody is the author of many books, including Secrets of Good Health, You Can Fight Cancer and Win, Jane Brody's Good Food Book, and Jane Brody's Nutrition Book. Her forthcoming book is about preparing for the end of life. Jane Brody's Guide to the Great Beyond, published by Random House, will go on sale next month. Jane Brody's column Personal Health appears in the Science Times section of the New York Times and is syndicated nationwide. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Hello, Jane Brody. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Celeste, and a happy new year to you.
Happy new year.
A healthy one especially.
Happy new year and a healthy new year to you and to all our listeners as well. In a column you wrote late in November for The Times, you took note of the fact that in this economically challenging time, we'll be making more meals at home. And we might find that that's not such a bad thing.
No, in fact, it could be a very, very good thing. And, in fact, that may be the best thing that happens out of this economic downturn. Because home cooking can and should be more nutritious, as well as much more economical than eating out. Just the other day, a friend of mine said, "You know, I had this meal in a restaurant yesterday, and it was so salty that I weighed 3 pounds more this morning than I did the day before." I mean, that's all water being held by excess salt. Now, if you have high blood pressure, that could be a serious problem.
Yeah. You know, I had dinner out recently, and I had that same experience. It was really salty. It was too salty.
Right. And I don't know. I wonder now if some cooks are like band leaders and disc jockeys who have deafened themselves with such loud music, and that the cooks maybe have so distorted their taste buds that they don't taste the salt anymore and they put too much in, which is really inappropriate. But salt is only one issue in eating out and cooking out and buying prepared foods, ordering in, so to speak, because there's an awful lot of fat that also gets added to those foods that most people aren't even aware of because it sneaks itself into the food. You don't see it swimming on the top. You don't see it floating anywhere. The food may not even appear to be greasy, but it can be very, very high in fat and therefore much higher in calories than you would want to consume in a given meal.
Yeah, and also the servings are on the large side.
Uh-huh. In fact, that is one of the reasons that most experts on weight issues think Americans have gained so much weight in the last couple of decades. Portion sizes in restaurants have gone through the roof, and people have begun to think that that's how much they should be eating in a meal. I mean, you get used to seeing this much food on your plate. When you're at home, you may do the same thing. And the idea that you have to be stuffed after every meal, leads to all sorts of problems. You really can stretch your stomach.
Yeah.
If you've ever been sick and you lost your appetite for a few days,
uh-huh.
When you start eating again, you realize that you can't eat as much as you had been before you got sick. The same thing happens when you eat too much day after day after day. Your stomach can hold more food, and therefore it takes more to fill you up. It's better to just gradually reduce your portion sizes so that your body gets used to smaller amounts at a given meal, and you'll see the weight will start coming off.
Yeah. Well, one of the things at this time of the year that I think is good is that we've had a fair share of cake, if you will. And I think we're ready to kind of say, wait a minute, because that cake suddenly isn't looking so good anymore.
Yeah, well, it doesn't feel so good either.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, just put on those pants that you wore in October and see if you can still button them.
Were you in the house with me this morning when I got up and got ready for work?
No, but I was talking to a friend at the Y this morning, and I said, you know, maybe your daughter can have some of those pants that I can't wear anymore. No, I mean, my issue is not a weight issue. My issue is simply that I'm 67 and a half years old, and your body does change its shape as you get older, even if you keep your weight down. So that's an added issue that, you know, we won't deal with right at the moment, because I'm not sure what the answer is, if there is an answer to it, except, as one of my walking partners says, just get your pants with elastic waists.
And get moving.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We do move, and we move every day.
Yeah.
Some hella high water and sleet, snow, whatever. I mean, the only thing that discourages us from walking around the park in the morning is ice.
Yeah.
None of us wants to
No,
fall.
And we've seen a lot of that this year, or last year, at the end of 2008, and now here it's back in the forecast for some of us here in the Midwest.
Well, you know, what you have that we don't have much of in New York City are indoor malls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great place to walk early in the morning before the stores open. It's not crowded. You'll find a lot of other people walking. I've done that many times when I've been out of town on speaking engagements and book tours. I just find a nearby mall, and I walk around the mall with everybody else.
Yeah. What kind of routine do you follow?
Well, every morning at 6 o'clock, Monday through Friday, I walk with a group of women around the park for about 3 miles, 1 hour of brisk walking. I come back and do my back exercises, and then I get on my bicycle and go to the Y and swim laps for another 35 minutes. That's my exercise routine on an almost everyday basis. On Saturdays and Sundays, we don't get up quite as early. We walk at 7 instead of 6.
Mm.
But you know what? We miss it if we don't get to do it. On those days when the weather is really impossible, when you're afraid that the wind is so strong you're going to be hit by a tree,
mm-hmm.
We're all out of sorts. We're just sort of not used to that idea that the body gets used to a certain amount of momentum, and you feel so much better, you look better, everything about the day starts better. When I go to the Y in the morning, I often run into women who say, I don't know what I'm doing here, I'm so tired. The end of their workout, whether they're working on a machine upstairs or swimming laps or whatever, or doing Pilates or yoga, they say, I'm so glad I came.
Mm.
I feel so much better. And that's what gets me here, even on the days when I don't feel like coming. I know that I will feel so much better when I'm finished.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Jane Brody is our guest this afternoon. She joins us for a first look at diet and nutrition of 2009. This is a topic we take up once a month on the first Monday of the month. Jane Brody, of course, is the award-winning personal health columnist for the New York Times and best-selling author. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I just tuned into the early part of the introduction here talking about restaurants, and I wanted to share something that someone told me, and I actually think it was my doctor years ago, and it's something when I remember to it is really helpful, which is when I go into a restaurant where I know that the portions are absurdly large, or if I just shouldn't be eating so much, which is most of the time, I actually ask them to package up half the meal in the to-go pack before they bring it to the table.
Great idea. And absolutely a great idea.
I eat that for lunch, but if it's on my plate when it arrives, I eat the whole blessed thing.
Well, I think that one of the tricks, let's say you can't bring yourself to do what you've done, which is a brilliant solution.
Nobody gives me a hard time. I mean,
no,
I'm
sure not.
I thought it would be difficult, but people kind of think, oh, that's a good idea. I'll do that for you.
But if let's say you can't bring yourself to do that. The other solution is to simply eat slowly enough so that everyone else at the table finishes ahead of you. And, and you know, if you're having a conversation, I mean, assuming you're not eating out all by yourself, if you're having a conversation with people, it's pretty easy to eat more slowly because you're not supposed to talk with food in your mouth. And if you put your fork down between bites, that also helps. That's a really hard thing for people to do.
This just makes concentration. I'm a wolfer, and I've never seemed to be able to train myself. But if the food's not there on the plate, and I'm hungry at the end of what I've eaten, which I usually, I'm full at the end of what I've eaten, which I am. The last half of it is strictly oral fixation.
Exactly.
I just wanted to share that. It was something that when I remember to do it, it's always a good thing.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank
for
you.
Me.
Okay.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are invited. If you've got a tip to share, a recipe to share, a question, give us a call. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. I want to go back a little bit more to exercise. Has exercise always been a part of your life?
Yes, it has. And it even was a part of my life when I was a lot heavier than I am now. It's always been important to me. I grew up in an active family, and that helps a lot to set the stage for lifelong physical activity. But what's different about the last, I would say, 30 years of my life than earlier was that it's now a routine. I make it a routine. It's factored into my day just like eating, sleeping, and brushing my teeth. Mm-hmm. I don't make the decision each day to exercise. I just do it. What may change is what I do, or exactly when I do it, although I try to always do it in the morning because things happen during the day. It interferes with what you're planning to do when you say, oh, my God, maybe I don't have time to go to the gym now, or maybe I don't have time to do this walk, whatever. But if you make it a commitment, because let's face it, it's part of life. It's critically important. We evolved as an active species, and we have become anything but that.
Do you think, you said earlier that you walk with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that is part of being successful at doing it every day?
So. Very much so. I mean, I know people who tell me, I know that this person is waiting on the corner for me. If I don't show up, she's going to be very disappointed.
Mm.
And not only that, it makes it much more fun. And one of my walking partners says, every single time I walk with you, she says, I learned something new. And not just from me, from anybody, from any one of the people in the group. There's some new piece of information that comes out in the course of conversation that is enlightening, important, useful, whatever. Not to mention the fact that we see lovely things. I mean, the other day, speaking of ice, the geese on our local pond were basically ice skating. It was very amusing. It was very amusing. The geese were trying to get from one patch of water to another, and they had to climb over this ice patch, significantly large piece of ice on the top of the water, and they were sliding along just like you would skate. It was hilarious. I wish I had had a movie camera with me to record that.
Yeah. You said a moment or two ago that at one point you were heavy.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen, and what turned things around?
It happened in large part because I was very unhappy and unsettled. And I started to gain weight. I mean, this is a very true life story, a life situation that a lot of people have encountered, where they felt unloved or unwanted or out of sorts or what have you, and they turned to food for solace, which is what I did, because I grew up in a household that that linked food and love. Mm. And that's, for parents of young children, this is a terrible, terrible mistake to do. It's terrible to urge children to eat when they say they're finished. It's terrible to say, you know, mommy and daddy will be so proud of you if you finish your meal. Forget that. That has nothing to do with being proud. But I had that kind of an upbringing, and so when I felt unloved, I turned to food. And I gained weight, not a huge amount of weight at first, but then I, of course, started to diet, and that's the big mistake. Diets are a disaster. A diet is something you go on to go off, and nobody plans to stay on a diet forever. And I got fatter and fatter on these diets, one after the other. Until one day I woke up and I said, this is ridiculous. I can't live like this. I can't eat like this. I had to change the way I dealt with food. And so I made a decision. I literally made a decision the way some people decide to quit smoking or whatever. I made a decision to start eating three meals a day, wholesome, healthy, substantial meals, and with a wholesome snack between them if I was hungry, if I needed something to eat. And I allowed myself one little no-no every day. It might have been two cookies or a little, a couple of spoons of ice cream, something. If I was out with friends, I would have a bite of their dessert, but just something so that I didn't feel deprived. And over the course of 2 years, I lost a third of my body weight, and I never gained it back.
Wow.
But I changed the whole way I approached food, and I changed the kinds of foods that I was eating. And so both of those things are really important.
Hmm. Let's take another call now, a listener in Chicago. Line 4, hi.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your insight and experience and enlightening us now that we're approaching those retirement ages. And I'd like to focus more on the matter of requirements for our aging population, including myself, and what I'd heard regarding digestion and assimilation, such that we may want to consider combining foods in a particular way, where before we just ate anything that was on the plate that was given to us, and so to speak. Is there any views that combining certain foods enhances your digestion and assimilation? Because if you just... like we've gone through the holidays, everything's there, we eat this and that, and our system gets so overloaded, and the blood goes to the tummy, and the brain becomes fatigued, you know, that there's all those things that we're encountering, and now that we're aging, we've got to enlighten ourselves a little bit more on this matter about how the body assimilates.
Well, you do lose the ability to absorb certain nutrients, or I shouldn't say lose it entirely, but your ability is depleted, it's diminished as you get older. And so certain things are important to include in your diet, and one of them is vitamin B12, which requires stomach acid to be absorbed. And so if you don't have, and as you get older, your stomach acid level declines and your ability to absorb vitamin B12 declines along with it. So you might want to consider, if you're not a big meat eater, you might want to consider a B-complex supplement. It doesn't have to be huge doses, but just one of those combinations of B12, B6, and folic acid, which would be fine. The other thing is calcium. Calcium is critical throughout life. Of course, the most important time to have it is when you're young and your bone structure is being constructed. But you keep losing bone as you get older, and you need the calcium to rebuild it. And in order to use calcium, the body requires vitamin D. And that's another nutrient that gets depleted as you get older, because your skin—it's most of it comes from the vitamin D that's made in skin when it's exposed to sunlight, and the ability of the body to convert that D into the active hormone in your body diminishes as you get older. You're in the sun a lot less. You're wearing sunscreen, or you're wearing cover-ups or what have you, and you're not getting into the sun. So vitamin D as a supplement is very, very important. So you can do this very easily by combining the calcium and vitamin D as a supplement.
Another aspect of assimilation is relating to our digestive juices, as you referred to.
No, it has nothing to do with combining.
Hydrochloric acid has been considered to be an integral part of digestion for some people maybe lacking it. So it's a matter of finding these things out. And I thank you for your program. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Anything there you want to follow up on?
Well, you know, the problem is, at any age, we should not be so careless and just eat just because something is there or because we're hungry and we grab whatever's handy. Your body deserves a little thought at any age, and it's not just when you get older. When you get older, it becomes more of an issue. One of the issues for older people is they don't eat enough, and they start to get frail. They get weak, and they're susceptible to falls. They don't drink enough liquid. One of my elderly aunts just fell in her apartment because she was dehydrated. I mean, this should never happen. It should never happen. But doctors are not very good about, they don't know enough about nutrition to start with, most of them. And those who do may not even think about warning their older population, their older patients, to be sure to have enough liquid every single day.
Yeah. You know, recently, very recently, I think it might have been your last column. It must have been December 29th. Cookbook Medicine Won't Do for the Elderly.
That's right.
Really nice column.
Thank you so much.
And here, I brought it up online because I thought it was really good. This is really a value. You know, what do you do if you've got, if you are an older person, or if you are concerned about someone who is older, a parent or an aunt? You asked a doctor how he would approach a new patient of 85. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, as we age, how do we think about what kind of physician we want to have and what kind of care we want?
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, you want the physician who cares about the person and not just the disease that you might have. Most older people have a number of chronic conditions. I shouldn't say most. A large percentage of the older population has a number of chronic conditions, and doctors tend to focus on those disorders because that's what they learned about in medical school. That's what's in their textbooks. Instead of asking critical things like, what is your life like? What is your day like? Mm. What is it that you enjoy doing? What is it that you enjoy doing that you can no longer do? What is it that you think you would like to do again, but things are in your way and you can't make it happen? Not to mention the fact that integrating the care of a chronic condition into a person's life is critically important. I mean, a lot of people with diabetes, for example, don't have their meals at the right times. They don't have they get insulin reactions. They have bad reactions because their life is a little bit chaotic or their meal time is irregular.
Yeah. So we want to look at the quality of life.
Quality of life. I mean, what's the point of living to 100 if you're not having fun?
Yeah.
You know, one of my friend's father, I love this story. He was in an assisted living facility, and he had been there for quite a few years, and he enjoyed going out to lunch with the girls, as he called them. Now, for his 104th birthday, his children asked him what he wanted, and he said, some new clothes. But, Dad, what do you need new clothes for at 104? He said, so I can look good when I go out with the girls. And so they bought him new clothes. And he didn't die till 108, so he got 4 years out of those clothes.
Sharp-dressed man.
Yep.
To the end.
But that's what it's all about. It's all about quality of life. And if your life doesn't have any quality, there are many things that a physician can do to improve the situation.
Yeah. To get through that rough patch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. There are so many different forms in which vitamins are sold. I was looking at especially vitamin D and C see,
mm-hmm.
and you read up on different things, and you don't get a good picture of what exactly to buy. Is there a good source one can read up on that?
Well, let's see. Is there a good source? You know, I write about these things in my columns from time to time, but I'm trying to think if there is a book that I can recommend to you. I can tell you that you don't need to take vitamin C as a supplement. That's number one. You should be getting that from your foods. Citrus fruits and vegetables that are loaded with vitamin C. And it, you need to eat those foods anyway. You should not have to take it.
Okay.
But as far as calcium is concerned, calcium that comes with vitamin D, we used to say that vitamin D3 was important, that it had to be D3, but the guru on vitamin D has recently changed his tune and decided that any vitamin D is just as good. Vitamin D2 is as good as vitamin D3, so not to worry about it. But the calcium that is most easily absorbed is calcium citrate.
Okay.
So if you look for calcium citrate with vitamin D, you'll usually find it with vitamin D3, which is the best source.
Okay. And vitamin C,
you don't need it
as a supplement. Age-related?
You do not need vitamin C as a supplement.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we talk with a listener, also in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. I recently finished reading a book, I'm sure Jane Brody's familiar, Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Taubes.
Yeah.
Okay, and so I was just wondering if you might say a little bit about that sort of controversy. He sort of turns everything on his head and saying that it's really the carbohydrates that is causing people getting fat and...
Well, I have to tell you that I do not agree with Gary Taubes' thesis. I have not seen science to support it. I have been eating the kinds of carbohydrates that he says make people fat my entire life. The difference is the kinds of carbohydrates that you eat. If you are eating a reasonable portion of high-fiber carbohydrates, whole grains primarily, so that's whole wheat, that's brown rice, that's, whole grain pasta, whole grain bread. If that's the kind of carbohydrate you're eating in a reasonable amount, it should not have any effect on your metabolism, and any negative effect on your metabolism, and it could have a very positive effect because it's the only source of fiber in your diet. That and vegetables and fruits. So Gary Taub bought into this Dr. Atkins philosophy that in order to lose weight, you had to cut out all carbohydrates. And that's absurd.
Well, it's not all carbohydrates. Of course, he's also talking about eating lots of fruits and vegetables, which are carbohydrates.
Yes.
So that's not accurate.
It's not as rigid as Atkins. That's absolutely true. But to say that it's, you know, that you can point to many, many, many programs where people have lost weight and maintained their weight loss indefinitely, eating a balanced diet. And the thing that my objection with the Taub concept is that it is not a balanced diet. And I don't want to have to go through life never having another ear of sweet corn. I mean, that gets cut out. Because that's a bad carbohydrate in their book.
And
it just doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to me that you can't eat brown rice. It doesn't make any sense to me that a whole grain, a sandwich on a whole grain bread is not good for you.
Yeah. Well, if I'm recalling correctly, when you did Good Food Book, mm-hmm. Jane Brody's Good Food Book, mm-hmm. Living the High Carbohydrate Way.
Yes.
Your husband cut out some meat to take in more carbs.
Yes.
And he lost weight.
He sure did. He sure did. And you know, my kids grew up eating carbohydrates. I mean, their steady diet was Wheaties and raisins and skim milk. I mean, that's what they had it 3 or 4 or 5 times a day. I'm not kidding. I mean, I used to buy 10 boxes of Wheaties at a time. People thought I had a camp. But, you know, no, I said, I just have two boys who eat Wheaties three times a day. And in fact, they eat it out of mixing bowls. Well, not cereal bowls. The point is simply that they have 30 to 32-inch waists at age almost 40. They have never had a pinchable inch in their lives. They are physically active. They are busy professionally. They are parents. They have the same kind of lives as everybody else does. But they eat plenty of carbohydrates. I mean, look at the Asian population. Look at the people who depend upon rice as the base of their diet, and they're not even eating brown rice. They're eating white rice, which is not particularly good for you. But they are not fat. So how can Taub turn around and say that those kinds of carbohydrates make you fat? That's not what makes Americans fat.
Let's take some more calls. Next, we're going to go to a listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Jane Brody.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to say, Jane, that I've used your textbook. I'm not textbook, but it could be, since 1990, and I remember my husband wrote in it, try each recipe at least once. And believe me, over these years, I have.
Good for you.
Yes, and because I have a PhD in biology, and I've been a kind of promoting my own, self health with good food eating. My question to you is, I recently developed what this is called acid reflux disease, and you're supposed to take this medicine, which is supposedly called a protein pump, that inhibits the acid from moving up into your esophagus. But the trouble with that is I discovered in some of my readings that when you do that, there isn't enough acid to allow the vitamin B12 to be absorbed. So I've recently then started taking vitamin B tablets as a sublingual form. Do you agree with
that? That's a great idea.
Huh?
That's a very good idea.
Right. So you more or less agree with that, that prediction?
It absolutely does diminish stomach acid.
Good.
And that is one of the issues that I wrote about recently when I wrote a column on B12.
Okay.
So,
well, that's very good. I'm good to know that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But it's really important, though, to control your acid reflux.
Yes, it does.
You don't want to damage your esophagus.
That's right. It has been successful in that,
Good.
I must say that I was glad to learn of the taking the sublingual, which on the bottle says is for vegetarians particularly.
Yes, because they're not supposed to. Well, the reason is vegetarians don't eat any animal products, and B12 only comes from animals.
Right, yeah. Oh, I was going to also tell the other caller that a textbook that I have been using is called the Real Vitamin and Mineral Book, and the author is Sherry, Shari, Lieberman, Lieberman, and she has a PhD, and she's a specialist in what you're talking about as far as the nutrition and the use of it. Of materials. So it's an excellent textbook.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's take another call. Listener on line three in Champaign. Hi.
Hello. Once again, a very good discussion here, Celeste. My question goes to a specific fruit, and that's cranberries.
My favorite.
Mine too, and I've acquired such a taste for cranberries in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, and I've found that eating cranberries have given me an opportunity to lose quite a bit of weight.
That's very interesting. I have not heard that. I don't know anybody who eats enough cranberries to substantiate it, but I use cranberries. I actually have a file in my recipe file just for cranberries. That's how much I love them and how many different things I make with them. That's a very interesting little tip.
Well, I found that...
They're very good. They're very high in antioxidants.
Yes.
So they're very good for you.
Yes. And now they have them in, say, cran raisins.
Mm-hmm. You know, raisins. They call them
kind
raisins.
Of fashion. And they're very, very good. And I just wanted your opinion on that.
Well, raisins are slightly sweetened. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to eat them. They would be too sour. I mean, you would be able to eat them, but they wouldn't taste very good. Raisins are perfectly fine. I cook with them. I use them in my salad. I make biscotti with raisins and pistachio nuts. They're delicious. They're a fine little snack, and if it keeps you from eating something much worse, you know, these rich cookies or candy or what have you, I think that's fine to eat.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome. And I'm thinking now of a cranberry recipe that's in your good food book,
mm-hmm.
Cranberry Bread Brody.
Yes, that's a perennial favorite.
Yeah, that looks wonderful. We'll encourage folks to pick up your book at the library or at the bookstore. It's still, you know, I've had this book on my shelf for many years now, right? And it still works.
Yes, it still works. And, you know, people say, well, what about this high carbohydrate way? Well, if you look at what the carbohydrates are, you'll see that they're whole grains, they're whole foods, they're full of nutrients. And the whole beginning of this book describes the nutritive value of the different carbohydrate foods. So, you know, you can see in an instant why it is that I think it's a mistake to cut these things out.
Mm. I told my producer this morning I should have bought this in hardcover because the paperback is falling apart.
Well, the hardcover eventually falls apart, too. And,
yeah.
There's a reason for it because I insisted that since this is a cookbook, it is just... The Good Food Book is both a cookbook and a textbook all in one, but I insisted that any cookbook should stay open to the page of the recipe that you're preparing. You should not have to fight with the book.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the binding does wear out, I don't think they used the right glue or something, or maybe they were skimping on for economy reasons, but all three of my cookbooks, and there are three of them, stay open to the page of the recipe, and if you use it enough, eventually the binding breaks. I just recently looked online to see what they cost to buy, but I think that you can get some used copies that are in good condition, not too expensively.
Yeah. Let's take some more calls. Next we go to a listener in Urbana on line 2. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. I was wondering if, Jane, you could comment on food preparation
mm-hmm.
for a little bit, and
sure.
if you have a preference of raw foods to cooked foods, and roasting versus cooking on the stove top.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, it's a very good idea to have nonstick pans so that you don't have to use a lot of fat when you're cooking things that on the stove top. Secondly, I've forgotten what the middle one was.
Raw food.
Raw versus cooked.
Right.
For the most part, you're talking about vegetables. I mean, you're not going to eat raw meat. You're not going to drink raw milk. You know, you're talking about vegetables. Cooked vegetables, the nutrients become more easily absorbed from cooked vegetables than from raw vegetables. That's not to say you should never, ever eat raw vegetables, but... A raw carrot is less nutritious than a cooked carrot. So it's worth keeping in mind that this whole concept that somebody promoted some years back, that we should all be eating raw foods, is ridiculous. If you have salad, you're not going to cook it unless you're eating a cooked kind of salad like,
like a couscous salad? Or...
Yeah. But I'm talking about vegetables now.
Yeah, okay.
Most salads have raw vegetables, and they're fine, and they're delicious, crunchy, they're satisfying, they fill you up. It's a good thing to eat. But to think that, you know, that you're somehow losing the nutrients by cooking the food is ridiculous, especially if you cook in a microwave, incidentally. If you steam or microwave your vegetables, they hold on to their nutrients very, very well.
And roasting?
Roasting is good if you put, if you roast on a rack so that the fat can drip off and you don't eat the fat
okay.
that drips off.
Yeah.
If you use the fat that drips off and make it into a gravy, then you're defeating the purpose.
Okay. Let's take another call now. A listener in Mattoon, line four. Hi.
Hi. I'm enjoying your program very much. I'm looking at my 1985 copy of your one of your cookbooks, and it is falling apart. In fact, the curried cream of broccoli soup just automatically falls open, too. The whole back is broken there. I think it's got sort of saturated in chicken broth.
Uh-huh.
But at any rate, what I really want to know is something about vitamin D. And I haven't been able to find out if, do you look, when it comes, when the sunshine comes, I know when you stand out in the sunshine, you're getting vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
But what about coming through a glass window? Do you, does it lose its?
No, you know, you can get sunburn through glass. So you do get sun through glass.
So you do get
yeah.
most of the important.
I mean, yeah, the issue is how, as you get older, your body is less able to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the recommendations now are to take a supplement of
yeah.
vitamin D. I mean, there's not even enough in milk. Even if you consumed a quart of milk a day, you wouldn't get enough vitamin D.
I see. You don't assimilate it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome. Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
One of my problems with advice to extend one's life is that life is extended on the wrong end. You know, here I am, 83 years old. I dislike exercise. I eat like a pig. I love my martinis. And I feel that at 83, I've lived a full life. I hate to put this sour note into your conversation, but I'll take your comments off the air.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a sour note. There are plenty of people who agree with you, and the question that I would ask you, if you got, let's say you were diagnosed with a cancer, would you decide not to be treated? Because you said, I've lived a full life, I've enjoyed my life, and I don't want to do this anymore. You know, we have a right to make that decision. So, you know, to say life is extended at the wrong end, I mean, I know plenty of people who are having a wonderful time in their upper 80s and even in their 90s. My husband plays bridge with a man who turned 91 in December, and he's as sharp as a tack, and he will continue to play bridge for as long as he can see the cards.
Mm, yeah. And I bet that sharp-dressed man we were talking about earlier at 108,
yeah.
when he went out with the girls, he might have had a martini.
He probably did, and there's no reason not to have that martini. You know, a drink a day keeps the doctor away.
Let's take one more call before we're out of time. Line three, Urbana, hi.
I wanted to follow up a little bit on the question of carbohydrates in the Gary Taub book.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem to me there's a number of questionable things in Taub, particularly his assertion that exercise has no real bearing on issues of weight and so forth, but it does seem to me that the core kind of principle there, diet-wise, is not that carbohydrates entirely are bad, but rather a diet high in refined carbohydrates, such as those from, let's say, white rice or white flour,
mm-hmm.
or especially, you know, refined sugar and high fructose corn syrup,
mm-hmm.
is unhealthy, particularly if it's also a diet that's low in fiber. So I'm not sure how your
I agree with
suggestion.
That 100%. 100%.
Okay.
And it's exactly the kinds of carbohydrates that I recommend against.
Yeah, okay. Fine. It doesn't seem clear to me how significantly your advice is in contrast to his, which actually is very similar to that.
And
a number of people's advice, yeah. for what it's worth.
If that's what he's saying now, that's a very different story than he was promoting earlier.
That's having recently read that book and a number of others, including the anti-cancer book, which was being promoted on WILL recently,
mm-hmm.
It seems to me that's the consensus position, actually, though, of course, Americans eat very little of
whole of the grains, good right? of the good carbohydrates. And yeah. and my book is my book focuses on the good carbohydrates, the ones
right,
that are
well.
Wholesome and full of nutrients and fiber and satisfying and you don't have these huge portions. I mean, that how many of your listeners know what a portion of pasta is? If you look at the package, a pound of pasta is supposed to feed 8 people. Not 2, not 4, but 8. Now, if you want to have a double portion, you've got to double those calories. You've got to think about how much more, you know, what else are you eating at that meal?
Mm.
Are you also having a half a loaf of bread?
Mm.
You know, what else is going in there? If you see what the Italians eat when they eat pasta, they eat a 2-ounce uncooked portion. That's what it is, 2 ounces of uncooked pasta. And that's their portion of pasta. That's not a huge amount.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for clearing that up. I also would just say let's get the government out of the business of promoting high-fructose corn syrup.
Oh, I'm with you on that one.
You know? All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. There we have to leave it. The time has flown by. Jane Brody, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste, for having me on.
My pleasure. Jane Brody has been our guest in this portion of the afternoon magazine. She's the author of many books, including Secrets of Good Health, You Can Fight Cancer and Win, Jane Brody's Good Food Book, and Jane Brody's Nutrition Book. Her forthcoming book is about preparing for the end of life, Jane Brody's Guide to the Great Beyond. Published by Random House, it will go on sale next month.